Welcome to The Hobcast, a weekly podcast from Hoback Books, an independent publisher of thrillers, crime, and suspense novels. Each week, we'll take you behind the scenes of what we do, the challenges and the triumphs, the bumps and troughs of building a new creative business in this pandemic world. We'll hear from the people who make all this possible, the authors, cover designers, and editors, and we'll have expert insights from our guest star interviews. Nothing is off the agenda on The Hobcast from Hoback Books, as we combined trad values and an indie spirit.
Hello.
And welcome again to The Hobcast Book Show from Hoback Books. I'm Adrian Hobart.
I'm Rebecca Collins.
And this is the podcast of Hoback Books, who produce the following.
Thrillers.
Crime.
Mystery.
Suspense.
You had an accent there, didn't you?
Yeah, I went a little bit, you know, sort of nasal and a little bit Liverpool.
It was like a soft Liverpool, though.
Very soft Liverpool.
And I just went fast.
Indeed. Indeed. Welcome to show number 21, We're Come of Age.
That's quite interesting because someone else is 21 today.
Well, plus 30. I'm 51 today. So it's lovely to share it with you, our listeners, on the podcast. And again, we thank you so much for your support and the messages that you send us. And it's really nice to know that you're finding this valuable. We do too. We love doing it, don't we?
Absolutely. It's actually the highlight of my week now.
Yeah, which is not saying for the rest of the week, is it?
No.
Nonetheless, it is wonderful to have you here. And our guest this week, we went to see her.
We did. So it's an in-person interview this week.
Yeah, with Jane Mapp, who has been the designer of the majority of our covers, in fact, for Hoback so far in the year that we've been operating. So lovely to go and see her. And you had a sort of one-to-one sort of masterclass in how she designs the covers. So that's excellent.
I did. And I actually learned quite a lot, which you'll find out soon. Because I thought I knew how a cover was designed. And no, I didn't.
No, I mean, you know, we all make us. I think that's the thing about publishing is there are a lot of assumptions going around. And I think we uncover as we go through and work with new people and whatever, the assumptions continue. We find new ones. One of these days we're going to write a sort of guide of the things that happen and the things that don't.
101 assumptions that aren't real.
Yeah, in publishing. But that's part of the joy of it, is that you can never predict. And actually, as we glide seamlessly into the news, I noted my news item really is that we're not alone. We've had problems in the past with Amazon claiming that we haven't uploaded the files for books.
Yes.
Within the 72-hour window you get just before publication. And this has struck a very successful author, someone who we want to get on the podcast very soon, Simon McCleave, the Snowdonia sort of murder series. He's done really, really well. But he had to send out an apology yesterday on Instagram saying that because of an Amazon glitch, the pre-orders had been cancelled. So if you wanted a copy, you had to buy it on the day. And we've come close to the wind with that one, but managed to avoid it. So it is the nature of working with Amazon is that, you know, if the system says no, there isn't much wiggle room.
No.
And that's affected somebody who's on his, what, ninth book or something?
I wonder whether it's a similar situation. So with us, it was that I uploaded the file and I left the laptop to potter around the house. And when I went back, it looked like it had done it. So I saved and closed, went to bed. And then I had the email from KDP saying, you haven't uploaded the file within the 72-hour window. So we think the Wi-Fi had a little wobble. So it wasn't a fault or something I'd forgotten to do. It was a technical issue, but there was no bending at all. It was just the way it is, as far as they're concerned.
Yeah, yeah. And these things, you know, there are lots of reasons and things that they catch you out on. We've had battles over spine widths and all sorts of things on the paperbacks and such like in recent weeks as well.
And also we've had the case twice now, I think, where Amazon has said, we believe this book is similar to another book that's already published. Please can you prove that you've got a contract with this author?
Yeah, yeah, that's happened, yeah. And we've, you know, each time we have a file with all the contracts all neatly and locked away very, very carefully, extremely important. But but we've had to send them off copies of these contracts.
And it takes time.
Takes time, yeah. So look, you know, no one let no one tell you that it's an easy path. Although, you know, KDP will say so, it's not the case. However, you know, they are the people we publish with, so our choice, and those are the downfalls that sometimes hit you. And the other thing they've done, obviously announced a couple of weeks ago, is that they finally unleashed paperback publication in Australia, which is a big deal. But actually, I went on this week to try and get that sorted out for one of our titles, just to sort of experiment, see if it's ready, and it didn't offer it as an option, which is a shame. So we'll have to look at that again, but that will revolutionise how people consume books, because in Australia they pay a fortune for paperbacks. There's a lot of tax involved in Australia. Books are not tax free. But apart from that, normally there's lots of import duties as well if they're sent over. So this will revolutionise the experience of Hobeck Australian followers, of which we have at least two.
Hi.
Hi, Kat. Hi, Jesse. Hi, baby Eddie. Teddy.
Teddy, yeah.
Yeah, Teddy.
He can't read yet, but he's definitely a Hobeck follower.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. He will be. So lovely. Let's look at the wider news, shall we?
Well, the thing that caught my eye was similar to something we touched on last week. So last week we were saying there's sort of a middle ground of authors who have struggled during lockdown because they haven't had, they haven't been taken up for new contracts, or they haven't had the budget allocated to them by the big publishers. And then in the bookseller this week, they were talking about how well the backlist has done overall. Now, the backlist, in case anyone doesn't know, these are titles that are previously published. You have your front list, which is the titles you're working on and in for the future, and the backlist are the ones you've already published. So, you know, you have to keep maintaining sales and marketing of those. For the publishers, backlist have done well, and they're saying this is because the publishers haven't been able to promote new titles so much. People haven't been able to go into bookshops, and where the staff would say, "Oh, there's this book out you might be interested in," you know, that sort of conversation hasn't happened. And people have sort of resorted to comfort as well. So they've resorted to things that published in the last 18 months or so because they'd heard about them before the pandemic, and those books have done well. So things like The Midnight Library by Matt Haig, which I've read, it's very good. When the Crawdad Sings, which I haven't read, but I do have a copy of.
You do, yeah.
They've done really well and consistently really well. So, you know, again, that sort of middle area of authors are struggling.
Yeah, it's a bit of a squeeze. And I think that more and more of them will go down the independent route without doubt, because I'm sure there's a weariness and fatigue about how they're being handled, which is a problem. Anyway, we've had a launch. We had Waking the Tiger was out this week and started strongly. It was number one hot new release in
historic Japanese fiction.
Of course it was. So congratulations to Mark Whiteman and to all our authors who continue to dazzle in the charts. Well, I mean, we're doing pretty well. And it's Crime Reading Month. As we mentioned, we were launching something fresh for Crime Reading Month, which is...
So we've put together all our free novellas and short stories into one compilation called...
I'm sorry, I'm drinking some coffee. Yeah. Crime Bites, which is a great title.
Yeah, and thanks to R.D. Nixon.
Yep.
Who came up with that title, because we were both sort of, I don't know, what should we call it?
No, we weren't very inspired on that one, but R.D. Nixon was. So thank you, that's Crime Bites. You can get that if you go to www.hobeck.net, sign up for our email list, and there it comes. You get the link, and you get all those wonderful content. Eight authors have contributed to that title, Crime Bites, with a wonderful cover by you.
Yeah, so please admire the cover. And you get 612 pages of crime.
Gosh.
For nothing.
Wow, that's a festival of crime in one release. That's brilliant. So, we're delighted with that. And that's certainly driven a lot of interest in subscribing to our mailing list, which is an important plank of the business. What else this week?
I can't think of any sort of national news. Well, there is one thing, isn't there? There's the Harrogate
Thixton
Festival.
Yeah.
Tickets are on sale as we...
Well, as this podcast, and no doubt by the time you get to this podcast, the tickets went on sale 10 o'clock, 7th of June in the morning, UK time. And, I mean, they're not cheap. If you want to go for the 3 days and guarantee your accommodation, it's £650 a person for most of the hotels for the 3 days. Now, the guest list and the announced authors that are going is a who's who of current crime fiction, curated by Ian Rankin, whoever he is.
Yeah, who's that?
So, yeah, we're looking at Ellie Griffiths, Val McDiarmid, Richard Osmond. All sorts of Richard Osman, sorry, not one of the Osmonds. you know, but I think if he gets a little tipsy, he might sing Long Haired Lover from Liverpool.
I think we need to ask him that.
Yeah. Well, look, we would like to go, but to be honest, that's quite steep. But then again, everything is steep at the moment because I've been looking for a holiday a week to spend with my two boys. Ben and James, and initially I was looking at the Algarve, and then, of course, this week, the Amber warning started flashing, and no one from the UK can go there, because it's not, you can go there, but you'd then have to go into hotel quarantine and take PCP tests, or PC, whatever they are, tests. I don't know. Anyway, it's a very expensive process, so a golf trip to the Algarve is shelved. Then I started looking at the UK, and, you know, for very ordinary B&Bs and whatever, you know, they're charging £200-300 a night. So it has gone crazy. And very sadly, another option that we thought we had, which was to take my father's caravan somewhere, well, that ain't going to happen because it got written off yesterday. It broke free from where it was being sheltered and ran downhill into a motorhome and stove the back end in. So my dad's in mourning. He was about to go on holiday in it and come to see us, first of all, for my birthday, and then go off to the Lake District and all that shelves. And so he really hasn't had a break for about 2.5 years now. And I just don't know what sort of state he's going to be in, because I think part of it was the fact that he doesn't have the strength nowadays, at almost 80, to manhandle the caravan like he used to. And anyone who caravans knows that that's part of the job. You know, to get it hitched up and towing properly, you have to have the strength to manipulate it onto the ball at the back of your car. And anyway, I don't know quite what the circumstances were, but that's the outcome.
We'll find out later, won't we?
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, thoughts for him, because it's been a really tough couple of years, like it has for anybody of, pensionable status in the UK and lockdowns. And my mother's gone into care during that time. And so it's been very, very tough. And he was really looking forward to that break, a chance to get into the hills and you know, potter about and see something different. And that's gone by the wayside. And so any plans to borrow the caravan with my kids? So, well, my two boys. We ought to explain that we have five between us. And so the three that are here, one of them's supporting me rotten with a fantastic PowerPoint presentation of all the things about the number 51 I should know.
Can you remember any of them?
He was talking about Area 51.
The laps.
Yeah, 51 laps of the Azerbaijan Grand Prix, which is later today, which we're going to be watching. All sorts of things. I mean, it was really clever, really clever, and very sweet. So very kind of him. So the Harrogate Festival, get your tickets if you can afford them. I'm sure there'll be an absolute rush for them because it is the first in-person festival for ages. And it is they describe themselves as the unofficial AGM of the British crime writing scene. So really, Hoback has to be there in some fashion. But, you know, it's a big commitment. Anyway, let's get to the interview. So Jay Mapp, I think you ought to explain our relationship and how that started with Jane.
Yeah, so Jane and I were friends from going to Zumba in Shrewsbury about 7-8 years ago. I had no idea that she could design, and we got talking about art, and she told me about her design background. Then when we started Hoback, I knew Jane did logos, so I contacted her and said, do you fancy working on our logo? So that logo with the cat with the whiskers, that's Jane's work. And then when we signed Robert Dawes, I said to her, do you fancy designing a cover? And she said, oh gosh. And she said, well, why not? I'll give it a go. And she did. And you know the rest.
And that's what we discuss as we met in her garden in Shropshire. It's not often we get out, is it?
No. And this is great. This is lovely.
It's been a beautiful week, and we are, well, not quite sunning ourselves, but certainly enjoying the outdoors. Where are we?
We are in a settlement called Ford on the outskirts of Shrewsbury.
And why are we here?
We're here to see a very special person.
Father Christmas.
Mother Christmas.
We're here to see Jane Mapp. That's who we're here to see.
cover designer, extraordinaire photographer, graphic artist, and one of the earliest friends of Hoback. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's really great to see you again. Now, I've met you, once, I think, personally?
Twice. We met at the zoo, don't forget.
Oh, goodness me. Right, okay. We'll go into Zoo Gate a little bit later. But I do remember the first time we met was in Shrewsbury, and we were going around Waterstones. And that was part of our sort of effort. I think that's probably the three of us trying to figure out what appealed to us collectively in terms of covers.
Yeah.
And I remember being, I think I was waving a lot of Wilbur Smiths at you at the time because we were looking at Anthony Dunford and Hunted.
We were, and we were trying not to touch anything. And
yes, it was really bizarre. But let's explain how you came into the Hoback world. I think that's one for you, Rebecca.
It is, yeah. So we first met at Zumba.
I wondered if you were going to mention Zumba.
And I'm not sure how many years ago it would have been.
Well, I stopped teaching about 7 or 8 years ago. 7 years ago? So, yeah, I think we sort of crashed into each other a few times, didn't we?
I certainly crashed into you, yes, Zumba. So, and I think we just got talking once and you told me about your graphic design background. And I probably told you about I was doing an art degree at the time.
Yeah.
You tell everybody that.
I do, but I'm very pleased.
Of course, you're proud
degrees.
Of it.
3 degrees.
It was very important. We bonded over art, coffee, Zumba, and the residents of Stars Hollow.
Yes, Gilmore Girls. You don't know about the Gilmore Girls, but both big fans of the Gilmore Girls. And and then the next time was I was doing a self-portrait, and I chose. I think I put it on Facebook. I said, does anyone want to volunteer to be painted? And you said, yes, me.
Yes.
And so I came here and took some photos and did a self-portrait. And then it was when we started Hoback and we thought, well, we need somebody to design some covers. And I think I said to Adrian, I said, I've got a friend. She doesn't do covers, but she's a graphic designer and she's very good at it.
Yeah. And I remember that moment and we're thinking, okay, this is a pump, because I think we set ourselves, or rather I had, we had a designer in mind who we've not used actually when it boils down to it, because every time I looked at their website, it had gone up by £100. It seems to be every time I clicked, it was like £100 a click. And it got to the point where, yeah, you know, you're talking about a significant, probably the most expensive item. And it is, I mean, in many ways, the cover is the most important item in publishing. Would you agree?
Yes, I agree. And I think we did actually approach this designer and they didn't get back to us. And that put us off immediately.
Yeah, not even a reply. So they got so big that they couldn't be bothered with someone like us. So we kind of passed on it. But we started, you'll explain how we started this relationship in terms of the cover design and the sort of process.
Yeah, I mean, I think I said to you, we'd just signed Robert Dawes and we had four covers that needed designing, actually three covers. Oh, no, and the novella as well. And I said, why don't we just see if Jane is up for the challenge? And I emailed you, are you up for the challenge? And you said?
I said, yes. I said, I'll give it a go. I have to confess, I mean, obviously I'd done the Hoback logo first, so that was
yeah.
Quite nice. You've forgotten that already.
we're so glib, aren't we?
How did we forget that?
Well, I mean, to be honest, yeah, we've talked about this on the podcast, haven't we, that all we were was a logo at one stage. We had a name for the company, and I think the first time we really felt that we'd actually made any progress was when you designed the logo, which is just genius.
Well, I won't take all the credit for that because, to be fair, was it Josh that
it was
designed
Josh.
That? He came up with the concept and I just made it work. That's so I have to give him at least half the credit for that.
And we get so many compliments, don't we, for the logo. People love the logo.
Yeah, and now the Hobcast logo and indeed the academic publishing arm of Hoback, which hasn't taken life yet because I haven't written the book, but it looks great with the mortarboard. But the whole cat motif just works a treat with the whiskers as pages of a book. It's just genius.
And it's the right colour for the Hoback cat.
Of course.
Aki.
Yeah, so Aki's very important. So, yeah, from logo then to expanding that to cover, let's talk about the challenges of that, because I know we asked for something I think it was, I had sort of feeling, yeah, let's do something classic British Art Deco kind of feel.
I think Golden Age was mentioned.
Yeah, Golden Age. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good, yeah, that's right. I mean, the briefs that we send you are sort of 4 or 5 pages nowadays, aren't they?
Yeah, they can be. They can be quite extensive.
But that's a good thing, because I need to know what you've got in your mind before I start going down a rabbit hole of what's in mine. So, yeah, the more information, the better. In fact, I've even started reading the books, if I can, now. And so that helps.
Actually, the most recent two authors have noticed that, and they've complimented you on that, saying you can tell that she's read some of the book. So I think that's really good that you do that, because you get a feel for...
Yeah, well, I think it's quite important, because if, for example, you ask for a house on the cover of the one, I need to check to see if there's any descriptors, because otherwise it's going to be the wrong era of house, wrong type of house. So if there's any descriptions of people or anything that needs to be on the cover, I've got to get that right.
Absolutely.
So in terms of how that first commission and to where you are now, you say dozen covers now in a year, which is amazing, and a huge variety of styles, which, you know, we've come up some bizarre requests, some of these things. What would you say the sort of top three things you've learnt from that process?
Oh, gosh, that is a difficult one.
Yeah, I thought it would be. Sorry, I like lobbing in the difficult ones.
I've learned that the more research that you do and the more sort of preparation and then even after all that, I tend to go with the first idea that I've had in my head, because I will visualize something in my mind and mull over it for a good couple of weeks before I even start collecting the bits and pieces together. And then I always think, well, do what's been asked for and then throw in a wild card if it's completely different. So I've learned to sort of trust my instinct a little bit more. I would say that's the first. Because having never done book covers before, it was a completely new. And luckily for me, I didn't actually make the connection with the name Robert Dawes to start with.
Would that have been too intimidating in retrospect?
I think I would have freaked out. I was like, it can't be that bloke off the telly. And I think I remember messaging Rebecca and said, you didn't tell me it was Robert Dawes.
I remember that.
That was just hilarious. But yeah, I think it was... I pinch myself sometimes when I do look at all the books that I've got on the shelf that I've done. But yeah, I've learnt lots about the technical side of it, the workflow side of it, making sure the formatting's correct and colour profiles. And I've torn my hair out on occasion. But every time you overcome something like that, you learn something more, then it's another victory, another win. So
yeah, and I think it's been a big learning process for us too, because I don't think when people embark on self-publishing or independent publishing, I think that you just don't appreciate just how much detail is involved in every aspect of the process, and particularly with the cover, because Amazon will spit you out, or Ingram Spark will spit you out. If there's even the slightest millimetre thing wrong with the spine, or, you know, it is extraordinary just how many things they can catch you out on. You've found this, haven't you?
I mean, that's happened to us recently, and even with the other designer, Jem, we've worked with, he's got years and years of experience. It spat out one of his covers.
So, yeah, and that's the worst feeling.
For that.
No, exactly. Exactly. I think the thing I take from all this, and this is a message to all our authors listening out there, but, you know, anybody, is that everyone's working with the best will in the world and with their greatest creativity and attention to detail, and yet somehow, somewhere in the system, there will be a gremlin that creeps up and gets you for whatever reason. And sometimes they won't explain what it is, but sometimes on the technical side, on the covers, often it's, you know, something to do with the way that they've cut the pages. We've had that problem before, haven't we? When the books have arrived, they've cut them at an angle.
Yes, and also there was one time when I uploaded the file to Amazon, and
I guess the internet had a little blip and I didn't notice. I went to bed, trotted off to bed, and the next morning I had a really angry email from Amazon saying, you didn't upload your files on time. That means you've lost all your pre-orders. So these things happen, yeah.
Yeah, that wasn't one of our better days, was it?
No, it was a Saturday morning as well. So I leapt out of bed at 7:30 in the morning in my pyjamas to try and sort this problem out.
Yeah, so I think patience and forgiveness are two of the qualities you need. I think patience is a really big one. Now, we sometimes, let's go through the process. So we'll, a little later, the two of you are going to go and have a look at the tech involved in designing a cover. But nonetheless, when we're having a to and fro over designs, when the first ones arrive and we say, yeah, we like that bit of text, and we'd like to perhaps justify it on the left or the right or down the centre, or that image is, yeah, we like that bit, but we need the other image from the other cover and then the colour palette. How do you react when you get that feedback?
That's pretty much what I expect, because the whole point really of giving variations is that you can sort of mix and match. I like to think that all of the options will work with each other. So if you wanted to change a font or use the base image from another one, then they will all work together. So yeah, I'd be almost disappointed if you just picked one straight off the bat, to be honest.
We almost did recently, I think. We went, oh, that's the one.
Yes, but we were saying this the other day, how, and you were just talking about this, how you've got sort of more bolder and braver in your design. And I was saying, actually, if we push back more, that's a good sign.
Yes.
Because that means you're being braver and bolder in you know, what you're creating. And there's a plane flying overhead.
Yeah. It's the Rozzers.
What's the Rozzers?
Police.
Oh, the police. Oh,
RAF Shawbury is over that way.
Oh, so. Okay. Yeah, I, you know, having moved to this area in general terms, I'm in Shropshire and, you know, Staffordshire, where we are exactly, I didn't know it at all. I just hadn't appreciated how much military stuff there is around here.
Yeah.
Extraordinary.
Yeah, you're lucky it wasn't the Chinook, because it shakes the whole patio.
Yeah, we occasionally see that flying up, they fly up the line of the canal, and yeah, it does shake the whole, you know, they are extraordinary. Anyway, I digress. Let's get back to covers. Sorry, I can't help myself. I would go military, talk about military for, well, you know what I'm like on YouTube. I'm watching any old stuff that involves metal and killing people with metal.
Vehicles in the sea, U-boats and all that sort of thing. Anyway, I was going to ask you a question, actually, because you were talking about when we met in Waterstones, and that was quite near the beginning of your career, cover design career. Have you become obsessed with covers now, do you think?
Yes. Yeah, I tend to sort of, I can't walk through Smith's or whatever without taking a little sneaky picture on my phone of sort of a shelf full of, and I'm constantly flicking through Amazon and just to see what's out there and what stands out, because I'm still learning, because this is just a complete new genre to me. But it's strange because it's like I found my thing, because I can combine photography with it, which is my other passion. So anything to do with photography, Photoshop and graphic design, it's just heaven.
Well, we noticed that in Fatal Trade, the more recent one, because we could see you'd put a lot of attention into that photograph of that. I mean, I love that box with the blood.
Oh, for those who haven't seen it, so go to our website, and it's one of our most recent cover reveals. But yeah, there is a box.
There's a box.
A cardboard box on a doorstep. And we don't want to give it away why that's there.
No, we can't.
But it appears to have bloodstains.
Bloodstains. Well, I brought it out here, sealed up, kicked it around the patio a bit to give it that used look.
Yeah.
And then I had to mix some acrylic paint with water and tip it inside and allow it to seep through the bottom, which was quite hard because it wouldn't sink in. But after I'd sort of kicked it around a bit and then photographed it, there you go. Saves me looking for one on Shutterstock, whatever.
Yeah, and that's it's really interesting, isn't it? I mean, with the, because you and I liaise over the stock images, and because we subscribe as Hoback to one or two agencies, and initially when I go into a stock photo agency and I think, oh, there's so many great images here, and then actually when you nail it down, Not many of them are portrait, which doesn't help a cover, so you have to sort of reorientate it and crop it and whatever else. There's all sorts of reasons why, you know, you think, oh, this would be easy. There's bound to be image. And then, of course, it's the obvious stuff. Like, for instance, we were looking for front doors.
Yeah.
And they're all medieval Spanish front doors, or they're Dutch. They're clearly not British ones.
You can waste an awful lot of time trawling through stock sites. And yeah, it is. It's not easy, but I find that these days I've sort of got to the point where I'll use 4 or 5 images to make one cover. If I can't find what I want, then I'll just make it work. And that's the fun part. Mm. The layers and the composites and all that sort of stuff. But we'll talk about that a bit later, I expect.
I mean, I kind of understand roughly what the technology is and the terminology you're using. But not being a very visual, I mean, I'm weird in the sense that I am visual in the sense that quite a lot of the cover concepts that you've designed for us, perhaps there'll be an image that's popped into my head, and then I've got Rebecca to interpret that into a brief, and then it's come to you. But faced with imagery on a screen and trying to manipulate it, I would be hopeless. I don't have the attention span, if I'm honest, to get the detail and cut it.
That's the bit I love.
Right.
That's the bit I love.
But I think we've both had a go in Canva, haven't we? So Canva is a software, sort of a foolproof software for cover design, and you had a go. And I think we both realised that, you know, actually this is not simple at all. You know, there's a lot of things you need to consider. I mean, I always find font quite difficult. Mm. So my question to you is, what is your favourite font?
I knew you were going to ask me that, and I don't have one. It's whatever's working on the day, to be honest. I mean, there's so many fonts out there, and it's a bit like being a kid in a sweet shop, and then you realise actually 99% of them are never going to work on a book. But yeah, I'm a big fan of anything that's sans serif, or should I say sans serif?
Yeah. And his brother Omar. Sorry, that was a terrible gag. You'll have to forgive me. I sort of sympathise. I go through font libraries. I'm just interested by the impact that a font can have, and I don't have the technical knowledge to know what would work. When we were talking to Jem, he was very, very. That's almost like his. He prides himself on the typography. That's what he thinks, in a sense, sets him aside from other people in the industry, is that sort of passion for getting the typography right. But that's a difficult one. If you look at amateur covers that appear on Amazon, people doing it themselves, that's often the thing that is most obvious, I think. Would you agree?
Yeah, I agree. I was listening to his interview again, as I've said the other day, and I completely agree. It's whether something will stand out from the cover, or whether, you know, you can't just slap text on top and hope it's going to work. Especially if it's on top of an image, you've got to bear in mind where it's going to go. And I used to be more precious about the images, but now I realise that you have to start with the typography. Because if you don't have that impact straight away, you're just on a non-starter. You can't just rely on an image, especially when it's going to be really small as a thumbnail. I think the exception to that would probably be Daria's Daughter. That's the only one I would say would be the exception to that rule, whereas the image is the thing that smacks you straight in the face.
Yes. Let's talk about Daria's Daughter, because it's one of the... I mean, we had a bit of feedback yesterday, which was really interesting.
Someone reviewed it on Amazon, and her sort of first comment was, I picked this up because of the cover. And then she said, I don't normally read books like this, but I picked it up and I loved it.
That's where my job is done.
Yeah,
absolutely. That's so. I mean, that must be a great feeling to get that sort of feedback.
It was actually, because Linda gave me the heads up, which was really sweet of her. So I went and had a look, and I was like, yay,
happy dance.
Yeah, a little happy dance in the car. I did.
Yeah, and it's such a powerful, evocative image, and I think that, I mean, your covers often express the story very successfully. I mean, a lot of authors think that's what the job of a cover is to express the story, and therefore they want 3 or 4 or 5 different elements shoved in to reflect all the different characters and locations and whatever, and that doesn't necessarily work. But I think Diary's Daughter, the image of an elderly lady in a sort of bobble hat holding, or is it the girl in the bobble hat? I can't remember now.
The elderly lady.
Yeah, it's wearing a bobble hat, and she's you know, leading this little girl, their backs are to us, towards, well, it's a very evocative image, because actually what we're talking about is a big explosion at the very beginning, the inciting incident, and how Daria's daughter is separated from Daria. It's down to this yeah. thing, and you captured that spirit and the maternal connection between Bridie, as she becomes known, and what's the name of
Margie.
Sorry, I should have this down. It's really it's terrific, and I think that cover, out of all of them, probably actually fulfills the promise of what you get inside of the text.
Yeah, I mean, it's I visualized that virtually straight away, and the hardest part was actually getting that from my head onto the screen, onto paper. But yeah, so some of them sort of give, I always say the most important cover is the one that you're doing at the time, but some of them do stand out. And I said to Becky the other day in a message, it's providing clothes for the author's children.
I love that.
Oh, that's brilliant.
They're babies.
Because it's all their hard work, months and months and months. I mean, I only see that book for a couple of weeks and come up with a cover, and they've been working on it for months, years. And so it's really, really important that that last bit is done properly.
Absolutely. So the clothes don't come from Primark, is that what we're saying?
They come from Charlie's. No one else is going to know what Charlie's is.
No, we've just to explain, before we got here, we took advantage of the fact that Shrewsbury has one of the most amazing outdoor living shopping emporia that I've ever been in. And my eyes lit up, and let's put it this way. I think I've spent the annual profits, if there were any, from...
Well, Hobank. You haven't lived if you haven't been to Charlie's, have
you?
Oh,
it's amazing. Anyway, to
digress again.
Well, okay, to bring, you know, we're going to be celebrating, it's my birthday this weekend, so we are celebrating with a new 3-in-1 smoker from some Canadian company, which looks amazing, like a Dalek, but for cooking. So we're looking forward to that. It's what we've bought on the way here. So we've doubled up on the journey.
I thought it was more Metal Mickey than a Dalek.
Actually, yeah, Metal Mickey is more appropriate. Or R2-D2 of cooking.
We are going to have to put a photo of this now, aren't we, with the podcast?
Yeah, that's it. We were going to have a lovely image of you, Jane, but now it's going to have to be the smoker instead, isn't it, on the podcast?
That's fine by me. You do realise that you are going to host a big Hobeck barbecue once you've got this sorted, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, that's always been our ambition. So when we write, and the authors will know this, we write a proposal. And in that proposal, we've always said, when this pandemic clears, and let's face it, when we're really thriving as a company, we'll have an annual celebration, get everyone together, all the people have contributed. And
it's in their contract.
Together.
You have to have fun.
Yeah. They have to get on with each other. Now, I mean, that could be really. I'm really looking forward to it, because we often speculate as to what the dynamics would be and who's going to get on with whom. But it's it could be interesting. Anyway, let's get back to covers, because I keep digressing. I'm terrible.
Do you think you're going to carry on designing covers? I mean, just say Hobeck disappears. It's not going to happen. Don't worry. But say we did, would you pursue this any further?
I would like to. I have done one other independent author, and that was a little bit scary, sort of stepping out from underneath the Hobeck umbrella. But yeah, I'd like to think that I could pursue it, because it really encompasses everything that I enjoy about my job. So I would like to think that I could develop that more.
Penguin Random House, we hope you're listening.
They're a bit busy with the merger, I don't know if you noticed, and fighting Waterstones.
They still need covers.
No, you're right, they do.
They may well do, but I think that I would also really love to work with authors that are sort of just starting out. I've got a real thing about helping small businesses, and I think the same with the publishing. I like the idea of sort of people who literally have no idea what they want to do or how to go about it. So,
yeah, that's very similar to our philosophy, isn't it? You know, we like to work with editors as well who have different levels of experience. And
well, I think the philosophy we've had as Hoback is that, you know, it's well, we're a sort of mixed economy, really, in the sense that we have some established authors who've been along this path quite a number of times, and we're very lucky to have them have faith in us and come our way and put their books through us out into the world, and other people who are looking for a first, you know, opportunity, and we've signed quite a number of people from that background. But equally, you know, it is about finding people. There are lots of people who have the talent to make a contribution to publishing who don't get a chance. It's as simple as that. And we are there, you know, as long as people, I think it's, for me, it's always been the case, same with the broadcasting side of it. I would be very happy to have anybody who is inexperienced but has the right spirit and the right attitude, and you give them the time to develop and watch them blossom. That's more important to me than finding a finished product who's been working elsewhere and you know, coming in with, you know, that's the easy option. Let's take the hard option and, you know, and be known for developing. And I think of, in my broadcasting career, I've got somebody who is now the major voice of Five Live, all sports coverage, was somebody I picked up who was working on a website commentating on virtual greyhound racing.
Wow.
And 8-9 years on, he's their biggest star. And when I first put his demo tape in front of somebody who was senior at the time within Five Live Sport, they said, oh, it's a bit squeaky, his voice. I'm not sure he's going to appeal. He's now the biggest star they've got. Just goes to show, you've got to have faith. And, you know, I could see his talent, but his attitude was spot on. I just hadn't had the opportunities.
Yep. You say a lot can be said for giving someone a break, I think. Definitely.
I mean, a good example is, I'm not going to name which author, but one of our authors wanted to have a go at editing. And so I gave this author an opportunity to edit a short piece of text, and he did a brilliant job. And so I'm hoping he will now go forth and offer himself as a freelance editor.
Yeah, I think, you know, that within this developing organisation, we can, you know, again, we've got people narrating for the first time their own books in Alison Morgan.
I was just thinking of her, actually.
Yeah.
And she's done an amazing job.
She's done an amazing job. And I'm just finishing up getting the next one out, which is Overhead Dead Body, the full novel, the first of the Quirk series. And it is a brilliant performance. Unbelievable characters, delivery, you know. And she's done a terrific job. And there'll be other people doing the same thing. So, again, you know, it's just a question of... I think a lot of what we do is about faith in each other, two of us and the rest of the people involved in our company.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, we've been working with you for 12 months now, and like you said, it's over a dozen covers, I think.
Yeah, I think it's 12 and 2 e-books.
12 and 2 e-books?
Yeah.
What's your favourite?
Oh, that's a tough one. Like I think I said before, I think it's the one that I'm doing at the time. The most recent one is always the favourite, but I suppose I do have a fondness for Throttled.
It's a great cover.
And Daria's Daughter. It's funny because they're the brightest of all of them, really, aren't they, as well? But no, I love them all. I love them all.
And now all your babies too.
They are. And getting them in the post and holding that book in your hand is just like, oh, I love it.
It is a buzz. It really is. And I love it when we settle on the cover, because it is quite a... It's a tough job because, you know, there's so many factors involved in, you know, there's author expectations, our expectations, your design philosophy and thoughts, and then there's market expectations, reader expectations. Getting all of those things and juggling all those factors, I think it's one of the toughest jobs.
And I think that's the hardest aspect, is the marketing expectations, because in a way you have to step out of yourself and your own preferences and your sort of aesthetic leanings. And I find that really hard with a sort of creative background, to think about what the general reading public are going to think, how they're going to respond, not how I'm going to respond.
That's very true, actually. You have all, you know, everything said, you do have to try not to be precious about your work, because books get recovered all the time.
Mm.
So it's, you know, it might be out there for a few months and then gone. So I do try not to be too precious about it, but at the same time, you've got to love it and take a pride in it.
Now that shines through. That shines through. Now, look, I'm going to shut my cake hole for a bit and let you two go inside and talk more technically and look at the process of building a cover, maybe, or deconstruct one of the ones you've done, perhaps. I don't know. Yeah, I'll leave it to you. But it's over to you, and I'm going to give the listeners a break.
So here we are in the hub of the Jane Mapp cover studio.
It's under the stairs,
just in case anybody's wondering.
It's the Harry Potter studio.
Yeah.
And it's very neat and tidy. And I was just saying to you, wasn't I, that I'm impressed with how tidy your studio is.
Yeah, I can't work in a mess. I've got to confess. My house is small, so I do need to be tidy anyway, but everything has to be in order. I can't work in clutter. I can't.
I think that's a very good thing. I think I could learn something from this. So we're sat here and we have, there's a laptop and there's a very beautiful looking computer monitor. And so I want to find out, so what would you do when you were, if you were about to start designing a cover, so you've got the brief and you've got an idea, so you there's something you want to get down, what would you go to first?
The very first thing I would do is source images. So I usually go to Adobe Stock, mainly because Hobeck subscribes to that, so I know I can get the images from there. But what I tend to do is I'll download previews of the ones that I think will work. And I usually start in Photoshop.
Yeah.
Which is just firing up now really slowly. Because that's what happens when you want it in a hurry.
Well, it's a beautiful picture of a cat to look at first.
Yes. Yes. So what I will do is start off by making a base, which will cover the whole of the back cover, the spine and the front cover. So it's like a whole piece of artwork that will wrap around.
Now, that's quite interesting, because I think I assumed that you would just start with the front panel.
I used to
realize that you actually think about the whole thing.
I did used to start when I first started. I did for Robert Dawes. It was just front panels.
Yeah.
But I learnt the hard way that when you think about the whole thing as a, because you can't have separate parts. You can't really have a back panel, a spine, and a front cover, because you have to allow for the shift in the printing. So any harsh lines might go off, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I do know what you mean. Yeah, because so there's always that room, that sort of margin of error, isn't there?
Yeah, so you have to, I'm showing you into the depths of my filing system here. Again, very organised.
It looks very much like my filing system, especially because it shows you a preview of the covers. Yeah. So my Daria's Daughter folder looks just like that.
It's amazing. In fact, I know we keep giving Linda a plug here. I should probably choose someone else's, shouldn't I? No, I will go with that. And just open that up. And what this will show you is a base. And then on that base,
I see,
there are a number of layers. Oh, goodness me. You have enough trouble with Aki. I've got...
Oh, I thought I heard mewing. There she is.
There she is.
So we have a extra house guest here. This is Rory the cat.
Yeah.
That was a silent mew. She opened her mouth and nothing came out.
Yeah, that's usually the way. But yeah, as you can see here, there are a lot of layers. If I switch them off, you'll get a rough idea how many components can make up.
Now that is fascinating, because we just see the final result. We don't, you know, we see that sort of, I know there's the process of sort of flattening it, isn't it?
Before. Yeah.
So we don't see the
the granular detail, and that you know, just now you took away the image of the figures, and then there was another layer that gave a shading to it.
It's quite hard to describe this, actually, but because it is quite visual. But yeah, so I started with that one, a base layer.
So that's just sort of that's fiery cloud.
Yeah, that's like a stock image of some fire and smoke. And then I can alter the hue and the temperature and the exposure by putting separate mask layers on. And then within those masks, it allows you to paint things in or paint them off is the easiest way to describe it, really. So you can blend those and alter the opacity of the different layers. So you're sort of building it up. It's a bit like painting.
It's oil painting.
Yeah,
it's just like oil painting.
Yeah, exactly like that. So then I added some more dark, that one, to make it...
And that's quite a big contrast.
Yeah. And then that was where we tried a hand. I didn't actually go with that one in the end, so that's why that was switched off. And a sleeve. And then I tried the first lot of figures.
So now it's turning into a recognisable image.
Yes.
As the cover of Daria's Daughter.
And the smoke. But yeah, sometimes I'll try various images. And if they don't work, I'll leave them be, because sometimes I might come back to them. But I can just switch it off and add more. So the next layer was where we added some context. So we've got like a wall and a pathway. Again, where I didn't want it, I brush it off, and where I do want it, I paint it in.
I think this is quite interesting for if there's anybody who uses something like Canva. So Canva is a software where you can design your covers, but it doesn't have the depth of detail and manipulation that Photoshop does.
No, it's very flat.
Very, very flat.
It just allows you to normally add a layer of text over an image or a block of colour. Whereas with Photoshop, you can literally put anything on there and blend it, paint it on, paint it off, make it darker, make it lighter. So essentially it is like digital painting.
It is. It's like I say, it's given it that depth of colour and depth of image.
And there they are, Margie and Evie.
And then you just clicked a button and they've got a sort of highlight on them.
Painted in a highlight where the light from the fire and the emergency vehicles catches them. So to make them look realistic and not just stuck on. And then they have a shadow.
Shadows.
And some more dark. I always tend to sort of put dark around the edges of crime cover, because then you've got a basis for putting the text on.
Yes, and it does give that extra feeling of perspective, I think.
Yes.
And crime novels are by nature quite dark anyway.
Yeah. So once I've got an image that I'm happy with, then I take it into a different piece of software called Affinity Designer.
Oh, okay. So this I didn't know about. I knew that designers tend to use Photoshop. I didn't know about Infinity Designer. Is this Adobe as well?
No, this one's not Adobe. This is by a company called Serif. It's been a bit of a market disruptor to Adobe, really. And it is nice because from a purely monetary point of view, you buy it as a one-off.
It's not a subscription. Yeah, because Adobe can get quite pricey, can't it, when you've got, if you're using lots of different software.
It can do. I mean, the main reason I started with this is when I first started out self-employed, the subscription was quite expensive. So I thought, well, I'm going to give Affinity a try. And then when I'm a bit more established, I can afford to get Illustrator. And in the end, I didn't bother because it's really good.
Because it's done what you need it to do.
Yep. So I'm going into, where are we, Hoback?
Familiar files again?
Yep. And then I've got full cover. So basically, for people who can't see this, basically what I would do is lay down the base and then work on top of that. That looks a bit odd because some of the fonts, I haven't relinked them. So it looks a bit weird at the moment.
That's the technical side.
That's the technical side, yeah. So once I've got a base image, then I can start putting the typography on top. And as you can see, it wraps all the way around.
Yeah.
So that when it comes to doing the full cover artwork, it's kind of done already.
Yeah. Now, I mean, that was going to be my next question is it complicated once you've finished the design and we've all checked it and we're all happy, and then I say to you, right, I need a version to go on, be uploaded to Amazon, and a version to go on Ingram Spark. Is that part, is there any complexity to that part?
Not really. It's a case of being really thorough when you're putting your details in. So like when you go to make a template for Ingram, for example, you will put in all your publisher details that you've given me, the ISBN for the book, and most importantly, the page count, because that will dictate the width of the spine. So that's going to be really important to make sure the artwork's the correct size. And it generates a template as a PDF file, and I place my finished artwork on top of that file very, very precisely.
So you have to be precise for that.
Very precisely, and I have to make sure I don't disturb the barcode. And then it has to be saved in a particular format, and that's when you get it.
Yes. And then I upload it and they say, we love it, fantastic, and we get books.
Yeah, exactly. And then pretty much the same for Amazon. They will ask you the dimensions. And the other thing that dictates it as well is the stock that the book's printed on.
Yes, the
so
paper.
The page count and the paper stock will dictate the spine.
Yes, because some paper, it might only be a couple of millimetres, if that, but it does make a difference to the measurement. So, yeah, you have to make sure you know exactly what paper you're using and exactly the page count. And it's sort of a balancing act, because we have to wait until the proofs have been checked and the author's completely happy with everything in the book, because we don't want them to say, oh, I want to include another chapter or something like that, because that would mess up all the measurements.
Yeah, exactly. And then it looks like that.
Yeah. And so we're looking at the full cover, the front, the spine, the back, as the finished article.
And I think that was the... Yep, that's the finished one. So that's what it looks like with the measurements and all the barcode and everything on it. And then I send it to you and I pray.
And then about 3 weeks later, I send you a paperback for your show.
Exactly. And then I know we've succeeded. So
it is a great feeling, though, isn't it? Like you were saying, that when you open the envelope, or for us, we get a box of them because we order about 20, 25 copies. And you have that sort of heart-stopping moment when you think, is it going to be okay? Is it going to be okay? And then peel back the paper and, oh, it looks great.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I sort of, it's very, I think Jem touched on this actually in his interview, that you have to bear in mind that what you're looking at on a screen isn't exactly the same as what it's going to look like when it's printed, because it's not backlit.
It can be very different, yeah.
Yeah.
But I think, the different qualities, and I think you've really mastered it when they work as both physical copy, paperback, and on the screen.
Yeah, because that's the other thing I do. As soon as you've approved it, I will save it as a JPEG in Amazon Spec.
Oh, okay.
And that's when I send it to you, because that has to be RGB colour.
Oh, yes. Because we that came up quite early on, didn't it? The issue of the way that Amazon covers appear on Amazon.
So there we are, Daria Webb.
Ah, and actually, I am soon going to be briefing Linda Huber's next book for you. So
I'm really excited about that.
I think you're going to enjoy it, because I know what we're thinking, but I'm not going to say anything now. I'm going to write it all down and send it to you.
Yeah.
So get your creative juices flowing again.
Yeah, that's the exciting part, when you open the brief and it's like, oh, it all starts again.
Do you have those sort of 3 o'clock in the morning moments, though, when you're asleep and your brain is sort of, you're in a sort of light sleep?
Not very often. No, I usually sleep quite well. I tend to think about these things as I'm dropping off.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then do you want to leap out of bed and get it on paper?
It usually sticks. I've got a notebook by the bed just in case. But yeah, it usually sticks. I tend to sort of, I can be thinking about this when I'm driving to the supermarket or anything really. And usually it's the first ideas, and then it it can be quite organic when I start because it doesn't always come out like it does in my head.
Yes, yeah. Because I know what you mean, that sometimes this image in your head and you put it down and it doesn't look right, even though you felt it would look right in your head. And also vice versa. Sometimes you can have an idea and you think, I'll give it a go. It might not be what I want. But then you put it down and you think, actually, yeah, that's...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sometimes you can have days where it doesn't work at all.
Yeah.
And you literally just close it all down and walk away.
I think that's the best thing to do. I think that's good advice. Thank you very much for allowing us to come into your home and your studio today and feeding us bacon butties and coffee. And
you are very welcome. I thoroughly enjoyed
meeting Rory the cat. And we're going to hopefully send you lots more covers to come.
Excellent. Thank I look you. Forward to it. Thanks, Becky.
So much to take from that. And that last bit when you sat over the computer and looked at the different processes and software that she draws on and inspiration that she draws on for each cover. It's, yeah, amazing.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that struck me was the relationship between cover design or digital design and when you're using your hand art, very freehand art, there is quite a strong relationship. I thought it was more digital and keyboard based, but actually no. So I learnt, you know, that her, because she does paint as well, so her artistic side feeds into the very graphic digital side.
Yeah, it's great. And you know, it's not easy, is it? I mean, to interpret our thoughts, the author's thoughts, and to not only that but achieve something that is commercial and appealing to the eye when you're scrolling through Amazon is tough. But yeah, she does a great job, and she's very firmly part of the family.
And she made us amazing bacon butties.
She did. So we're very, very kind of her. It was a beautiful day when we were there. Not so nice today. My birthday is a washout so far. This is not unusual, actually. I think I was talking about it earlier, but what used to happen, people say, oh, June birthday, that's brilliant, because A, it's in the middle of the year, and it's a summer birthday. It means you can have a really good party. But every time, it was always in the middle of exams as well. And often exam periods, I don't know if you remember this, but, you know, certainly when we were both at university at Exeter, we used to have these fabulous 2-3 weeks of wonderful weather during exams, and just as they ended it started to pour and that always happened on my birthday, so it's doing it again today. So we've shelved plans for an elaborate barbecue with a thing that looks like Metal Mickey and we're just using the oven instead. But
the house smells amazing.
It does smell amazing. Yeah.
All the herbs and spices.
Yeah, all that stuff.
But so, you had a very interesting beginning of your birthday, didn't you? Who did you wake up lying next to? Wasn't me.
No, Malcolm Rutherford, as you call him. Or Marcus Rashford, who went to number one this week with his book Champions, is it?
Something about champions.
Yeah. Anyway, it's a book to encourage boys to read. And he's an official hero of the podcast.
Absolutely.
We mention him almost every week.
I'm a big fan.
Yep. Well, he's preparing for the European Championships, which are coming up in a week or two's time, which is very, very exciting for me. Not so much exciting for you.
So I should explain, I bought a Malcolm Rutherford mask from Amazon and surprised him.
Yeah, and I didn't recognise him initially, but it was, the light wasn't quite right to sort of pick out his features.
Yeah, the first thing he said to me is, it's raining, it's raining.
Yeah, you know, glass half empty and all that. Nonetheless, though, it's fun. So, you know, we've had a busy week. I've been working pretty hard on the audio side of things. We're very close to completing two audio projects. We've got Overhead Dead Body by A.B. Morgan, which is narrated by her, and I'm just finished all the editing, and now it's a question of just checking for any things that I might have missed, which, you know, in real time is, you know, 8 hours work or something. And also Sleeping Dogs from Wendy Turbin, narrated by Judy Dakin, who happens to be our guest next week.
Yes, next week Judy is appearing on the podcast.
So she is a best-selling author with another publishing firm, boo hiss, but she's doing fantastically well. And again, another alumni from, or alumnus, I should say, from the Crime Creative Writing Course, MA, at the University of East Anglia, of which we have four authors now.
We have four, yeah.
We've picked up four, so it really is a sort of factory of talent. But Judy will be joining us, and she's doing a great job narrating it. and produced by her husband, Rhett, who is very particular about the technicals and has done a really great job creating a little studio in their cottage in Norfolk. And
I can't wait for you to family business.
Yeah, I can't wait for you to hear that one. And we are still waiting for the studio to arrive. It'll be a few weeks yet. As ever, everything that involves any timber, it seems, in this country takes weeks and weeks to arrive. You cannot find a shed for love nor money anywhere. Garden furniture, I was looking for it yesterday all over the Midlands, and everyone's sold out. It's just been incredible, really. I think, you know, everyone's having a staycation, and as a consequence, there's been a run on all these things.
And I was thinking about the fact, because we live next to a timber yard, don't we? And they were sawing trees, or whatever they saw, at 11 o'clock last night. So they must be trying to cope with the demand.
We've had three or four nights of that. And then also the field opposite us is winter feed for the local dairy farm. And they were harvesting that before the rain came today. So we had three days' worth of tractors and, I suppose, grass-cutting combine harvesters chopping up the grass outside, and they were rattling past us till 10:30 at night.
And it was about
every 3-4 minutes, wasn't
it? Yeah, I was going to say, it was about 4 or 5 a minute. And us. I was thinking, this is the countryside. It's supposed to be quiet and peaceful, but it felt like we were on the M6.
Yeah, it did a bit. It did a bit. But yeah, and now that field is shorn. It's not looking quite as bucolic as it was, but I still love the contours of it for some reason.
Yeah, it's got a medieval quality to it, I think. Just a sort of, yeah, like you say, the contours and...
Yeah.
But I know when you see it, you look at it and you think, golf.
I do. I think, you know, it's just, you know, aching to become a fairway leading up to a green next to the canal.
I half expect you and Toby at midnight with some floodlights to, when no one else can see you, to go out there and practice your golf.
Well, yeah, we've got a net arriving today so that we can drive balls into that. And not threaten the rest of humanity with our missed shots. But we've become golf obsessors the last 2 or 3 weeks. I played the Belfry this week, which for people who follow golf is a big deal, albeit it was their third course, the Derby, which is not nearly as glamorous as the Brabazon or the PGA National. And I played so badly, and it was so hot, I gave up after 9 holes because I was collapsing in the heat. It was about 30 degrees or something.
I think crazy. That was the hottest day of last week, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was
the hottest day of the year so far. And I just didn't have the stamina for it, really. I wilted.
Well,
I literally
old
wilted.
Now.
Yeah, 51. Who knew? Anyway, it's been such a pleasure to speak to Jane. Always a pleasure to speak to you, Rebecca.
And always a pleasure to speak to you, especially on your birthday.
Thank you so much. This has been the Hobcast Book Show. Don't forget to click subscribe to whichever podcast service you get. It all helps. As we build our listenership, and we look forward to sharing you our thoughts for next week and our guest, Judy Dakin. But from Rebecca.
And from him.
It's goodbye. Have a great creative week.
You've been listening to the Hobcast from Hobeck Books with Adrian Hobart and Rebecca Collins. You can find the show notes at our website, www.hobeck.net. You can also use the exclusive Hobcast discount code for any of the products at our Hobeck online store. Just enter the code HOBCAST20 for a 20% discount. Don't forget to subscribe to the Hobcast and feel free to contact us with any feedback. Until next time, remember our motto, Trad Values, Indie Spirit.